Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to podcasts from CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady, and of course we could not let a victory in the Glasgow Derby, which effectively ties up the 12th title in 13 seasons at Celtic, go by without a review of the game and a general discussion of things. So I am joined by Eddie Pearson and Andrew Smith to discuss that. And of course, we do touch on Brendan Rodgers, who was born to lead the green and white. So, gents, how are you doing? Did you both manage to enjoy the game yesterday? Eddie, I'll start with you.
Yes, I think I enjoyed it a lot more afterwards than I thought I was enjoying it as the game progressed. Loved the start of it. First half was tremendous. I know we'll talk about it in more depth. But I felt tenser at the game than I probably should have done. But that's just the nature of these games. You know, every throw-in's a disaster. Every pass-back could be intercepted and could turn into the worst week of your life if something different happens. Then went back and watched them when I got home, and it was much more comfortable than I remembered at the time. But the emotion at the time was the second half started to get a wee bit hairy. But yes, overall, all's well that ends well.
Andrew, did you enjoy the game?
Strange for me now, being out of the kind of not writing then and there. You know, it's a very different kind of whole ambience. Didn't enjoy it as much as you would have thought. Because after the pod last week, you know, I thought your man was onto something. So I bet Celtic at 3-1 and 4-1. Even though, if you remember on the pod last week, I did say 2-1 when you asked me for a scoreline.
Yeah.
So I want that noted. but I went away from my own thoughts, and then I thought, I've got to win this money. You know, when you're thinking when O'Reilly steps up to take that penalty, it was actually 10-1. I got a fiver on it at 10-1 for 3-1, and 4-1 was 18-1. I could easily, and I'd another fiver on that. I could have easily won that 18-1. Easily. And I would have enjoyed it even more, I have to say. I would have enjoyed it even more, even though it's not the point, but to have that alongside, you know, the kind of essentially winning the title would have been a nice wee cherry on top.
So I just want to know if you enjoyed it, and then we'll get back to the reasons why you did or didn't. So the first thing that went through my mind was something we talked about on the podcast last week, Andrew. I sat there, and as the teams came out, I turned to my brother and I said, "We don't need away supporters at this game." Do you agree, Andrew?
I do. And as I said that last week, as I say, I think the atmosphere, I think it shows Celtic in a much better light. Like the Celtic support, and I say the results have been good too, let's be honest about it, so that helps, but it really does feel, it feels less oppressive an atmosphere and more of a joyous atmosphere, more of a celebration of something, celebration of the kind of identity that we know that Celtic love to celebrate and Celtic support love to celebrate, but it really does feel like that. I don't think you do need away supports, and I don't believe any of that hogwash about like Sky putting the thumbscrews on the two clubs to get it sorted out because they've invested all this money in Scottish football. I don't really think that really determines how the spectacle looks on TV.
Well, particularly because if we give the sort of numbers that are being talked about for next season, 2,800, you'll still not see any away support at the game. And obviously, since Celtic beat Rangers every time Rangers come to Celtic Park, you'll not hear them either. Eddie, what's your thoughts on the away support?
Well, as we were saying there, I don't think it had any negative impact upon the atmosphere as we experienced it yesterday. It was great. The crowd were up for it. I thought the Green Brigade Tifo was tremendous, even with the ever so slightly subtle nod to Sacred Heart of Jesus in terms of the imagery of it. I thought that everybody
do you really think they had the subtle nod to the Sacred Heart of Jesus in that?
Look at the hands. That's totally what it is.
I'm sure it's the Sacred Heart.
Yeah, a heathen. It's clearly a play on the Sacred Heart of Jesus. All right, it's not because it's a Green Brigade. But you look at the positioning of the fingers of the hands. Yes, that's obviously what they're doing. Heathen, yeah. Of course it is.
And I was more thinking that there's never been any indication ever previously that the Green Brigade have a particularly religious bent to what they've been doing. That was all.
If you know, you know. Right? If you know, you know. Right. But anyway, so the point of that was that there was a great atmosphere there, but it was also, it wasn't just coming from the Green Brigade. It was all around the stadium, and I thought that was one of the key things about the week before at the Hearts game, that it was an energy and an enthusiasm and an atmosphere that's been generated across the ground, whereas I think a lot of the time we've now been conditioned to wait for the Green Brigade to give us the green light for what songs to sing and different things like that, and they lead that really well. But everybody was into it. The only thing I would say is, with being in the family stand, I don't want them back at all, because I've got guaranteed tickets if they're no back, and I think I might get away with it if it's only 2,800 of them, because I'm right behind the goal. But we need to wait and see what that shapes up like. But there is a bit of me missed the swing in my head round to look over to that wee corner in the away support when they go in and they go, how do you like it? And not being able to do that. I can live with it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it. But there's something. We've lost a wee bit of something there. Do you remember the days where you would point at one individual and the whole stand, and they would see you pointing, and they would know you were looking at them, and you'd know they're looking at you, and you were able to gear them a bit at, you know, for the safe distance of a completely different stand. I've lost a wee bit of that. That's the only thing I miss. That one-to-one, the visual contact with somebody, and you can say to them, you're getting beat, and you're going down, and you're miserable. That was quite nice. And to lose a bit of that, we just turn around and looking and just seeing more Celtic supporters celebrating brilliantly. I was happy with it. I can live with it. I'm not losing any sleep over them not being there. Don't get me wrong. But that was the only thing I missed, you know?
And the team was pretty much, I think, what everybody expected the team to be. Eddie, we talked about in the podcast last week, Andrew, Paul and I, and that was the team that we all went with. So, Eddie, was that the team that you were expecting?
It was a no-brainer. Forrest coming in for Coon was the only thing that was really going to make a difference there, because that's the team that if we'd had that team all season, we wouldn't be in this situation where we had a campaign or a league championship to be decided. The players that we have missed have been Carter Vickers, McGregor, Hatate. We've no quality in the wings. It all came back together the last couple of games, and that's why it's turned quite so comfortably the way it has. If we had these players all season, we wouldn't have been in a situation where they were within touching distance of us. We'd have ran away with it, because we're miles better than them. We're first 11 picks itself at the moment. Forrest coming back in just at this point has been brilliant, because I was listening to Andrew talking the other week. I'm a big Forrest fan as well. I've always been a big Forrest fan. I think Forrest has just never really got the appreciation he deserved, because he's homegrown. If we'd brought that guy in from somewhere else, we would have understood his qualities without a shadow of a doubt. And I think it's nice that people are starting to realise the impact he makes, not just in terms of his footballing ability, but as an older, wiser head, as a guy that's been over the course. And we needed somebody like that to come in and help stabilise us a wee bit and go, like, listen, this is going to be all right. We know what we're doing. We're good enough to do it. So bringing him in was essential for us. The difficulty we've had all season is that, see, when you go below that first 11, because of the terrible recruitment, and everybody knows about the terrible recruitment, there's not enough quality there to carry the team when you've lost two or maybe three players, which we had done for big chunks of the season. And that's not to say that I thought Hatate had a brilliant game, but guys like that who are my first 11, my regular starters, getting them all on the pitch yesterday is what made the difference. Because not just because they're better than them in terms of football, but they're winners and they've done it before. And Rangers were beat before they even came on the pitch when they saw that team line. They knew they were beat. And when they looked at their team line, you could see on following you back. Because again, while I'm watching the game after I go home again, I go back on it, follow, and I lead through the match reports of them. They knew they were beat because they knew they couldn't match your quality, because your first 11 is by far the best team in the country, and they showed it yesterday.
Would you put any of the outfield players, would you put any Rangers outfield player in a joint Celtic Rangers 11? You might put Butland in. I think you probably would put Butland in. Okay, but beyond that, is there anybody that you would swap out?
I don't even know if I would put Butland in, because I think that the thing you would do if you put Butland in, and Butland made good saves. He made a cracking save from Kyogo in the first half. In the first minute, he gets his hand say what could have been an OG for Souter, but I think maybe it was going wide. But the thing about Hart, that yeah, okay, Hart's getting older, there are aspects of Hart's game that aren't brilliant, but that leadership, see, just now, what we needed was confidence and self-belief in these final games. And Hart's got that. Hart's the type of guy that's going to step up. And it goes back to the experiences in the early 90s, that when we lost Burns and Aitken and Stark and all these experienced guys, and we brought younger guys in who hadn't been over the course, and when things got tough, they didn't have the mental strength to get through it. You see, that's what happened at Ibrox just now. They've got a team of guys who don't have the mental strength to cope with it. Hart's got the mental strength to cope with it. You know, he's not going to accept, well, we're just not going to win it this year. You know, McGregor's not going to accept that. Forrest isn't going to accept that. And that helps the more, that the younger, less experienced players as well. So, Butland's definitely got qualities. I'm not going to try and kid on every Rangers player's rubbish. But I don't think I would have swapped Butland for Hart, because what Hart gives us goes just beyond his ability as a keeper and actually as a leader in the team. And I think that at this point, it's about that experience and he makes that difference. They're talking a lot about Sterling. Is it Sterling? In terms of the guy to build their team around, I feel as if for them that's another false dawn. I don't see enough in them to think, right, I don't want them to keep him. You know, because they're playing him in the right wing, they want to play him defensive mid. They tried him defensive mid at Christmas. I didn't see anything there that caused me any great concern. Put him in at centre half, and they were saying, oh, he was great in centre half. I think that more reflects the way Rangers played in the second half completely. Rangers played like Motherwell in the second half. Rangers sat in with their 10 men and let us play around them. And then they waited till 80th minute and then they came out and they realised they had to have a go. It's exactly the way every wee team comes to Celtic Park to play. You know, and admittedly they've got an excuse because they were down to 10 men at that point. But they were just happy to just hang on in the game and just keep it tight. You know, their centre forward was playing in their own half. They weren't doing anything in an adventurous fashion until the last 10 minutes to try to make it nervy for us. And that made it easier for that guy to step into the defence and the right-hand side of their back four and have a fairly decent game. But I just don't see them having any real qualities there. Although, do you know who had a decent game? Silva had a decent game.
Silva was our best player. I was so relieved when they took him off. Just as Ralston had come on, I thought, that's a real... To me, that seemed a miscalculation in Clement's part. Because I thought surely he'd want Silva, and he still had plenty running him. I did think Celtic looked very leggy. Maybe it's just the kind of weight of expectation.
We get tired as the game went on. Yeah.
Yeah, you saw, he was out on his feet, O'Reilly. You could see it in the last couple of minutes. You could see a lot of them. They really were like, as if they'd run the race. So that was,
I thought that tiredness at the end was probably emotional tiredness rather than physical, in terms of, I thought our whole problem in the last 5-10 minutes was simply every single one of our players knew, as long as I don't muck it up here, we've won the title.
I know.
It's a lot played like that.
It's a lot to live on, but it's funny you say that, Eddie, about the last 11 games I was looking at. There's only one time Celtic have won. I mean, they've won the most of them, but there's only one time they've won by more than a single goal. It's really weird. Celtic have become so adept at beating Rangers, but they've almost lost the art of slapping Rangers down, you know, like really heavily when you think about it. The time I'm talking about the outlier is the 4-0. So the last two Rangers managers, Celtic haven't been able to beat them by more than a single goal in any game. And so many of the games have gone the way that yesterday. When you think about the Cup semi-final last year and the Cup final, Celtic should have been out of sight, but weren't, and Rangers kind of came back them. Look at the December game again. They were down to 10 men, Rangers. They were 2-0 down, and they still gave it a goal. You know, they got a goal back, and at the end, it was they were pushing for it. It's just a weird kind of anomaly or whatever you might say, that Celtic are by far the better team, and they're winning the games, but you think they're not really putting Rangers to bed the way that they should be.
I suppose if you look at the scoreline, then yeah, you can't argue with that. But in terms of the flow of the game, you know, again, sitting behind Rangers' goal in the first half, O'Reilly could have had a hat trick, but easily in the first half. You know, see if he had just, I think he said after the match, you know, I just had to get my eye in a wee bit and just slightly shift where I was aiming for. There was The free kick just went narrowly wide. He had another shot that just, I think it actually hit Stanson at the back. You know, it was very, very close at that point. Kyogo should have scored in the first half. Ida should have had two in the last 10 minutes. Maida was offside for both of his. But if he just tempered his run a wee bit, I think his just momentum carries him beyond it because he's so fast. You know, he could have had two as well. So we get a penalty. We win that by five or six. Mm-hmm. You know, that because they're coming out to just hang on in the game. And by managing to keep it at 2-1, they stayed in the game. I had that conversation with the wee man as we walked out. And it took me back to, I didn't want to be negative because you're related. You just won a league. You just won a league against Rangers. You know, what more do you want? And it reminded me of the St. Valentine's Day massacre. And I can never remember if it was that one or the week before, but it's the one where we ended up with two or three of them. Sent off. You know, Haley sent off and Hurlock sent off and Grant was sent off as well. St. Paddy's Day. Valentine's Day massacre was in Chicago in the 1920s. what a game that was as well. That one a long one. So the St. Paddy's Day one was basically, and there was a guy that lived next door to us, and it was me and my dad were there. Me and my dad just like to talk to each other, you know, and then, oh, Christ, there he is there, right? We're going to make conversation with this guy, and he stood right next to us for the whole game. Oh, good, Dad, I'm good to see you. Because we're those type of awkward, socially inhibited people that we don't want to talk to him, we just talk to each other. And so he came, and we had a great day, the two of us went, you know, we're beating them. And at the end, we're like, oh, that was brilliant, we would have loved that. And he went, ah, we should have beaten them by about five there. That's no good enough, and you're like, and yes, he was right, and yes, we were still hurting for 1989 when they did beat us by five, but he thought, let's just enjoy it for what it is. You know, and so I was hesitant about trying to say too much of that to the wee man yesterday. I could see we could have won that by six, easy. You know, and I was talking to people at work, and they were thinking, we're going to put about four by them, and you guys were talking about it as well in the previous pod, we'll do this, we'll do that. 1-0 is all you need. The ball bounces off somebody's backside in the 89th minute and goes in a pathetic way, and you win, and you get your 3 points, and you win the league. That's all you need to do against them. Win games against them. And we did it. And that's why we're going to be champions. And that's what's important.
I think when the fans are, when they do have those conversations about, oh, we should have won by more, I think it's more from that perspective of, as we've just discussed, we didn't enjoy the last 10 minutes. It's actually because the fans are sitting there going, if we'd have played this differently, I could have just celebrated for the final 15 minutes of this game because we were, I think it's more, so they're not annoyed. It's more a frustration of it could have been even better because I could have celebrated it for longer instead of having to wait till the final whistle to celebrate it.
I think if we'd have brought Iwata on a wee bit earlier for Hatate, I think we'd have been a wee bit more composed. So I thought I think Rogers actually said it. Hatate started giving the ball away a bit. I thought he did a decent first half, but he got really tired really quickly.
He gets subbed, it was after that one where we had the corner, short corner from Greg Taylor to him, and then he just can't control it with nobody around him, and then they get it and are right up the park, and I think he wins it back or gets the corner to them in a box from the challenge. And straight away, you see this quite a lot. I always think it's funny. You see this quite a lot with Rodgers, where a player is teetering, and then you know the player, and then he makes one mistake, and Rodgers immediately turns to his replacement. It's like, you're on now, because that guy's just gone over the cliff, and that was that. On actually Hatate, I don't know if you agree with me, Andrew. I don't think it's any coincidence that Matt O'Reilly's now playing the way that we think he is, when the total responsibility for creativity in the midfield's been taken off his shoulders and there's somebody else in the park who's supposed to be creative, and suddenly Matt O'Reilly's then returned. I mean, that first goal, it is basically a goal, mate. It is, there's a Carter Vickers appearance in it. There's a James Forrest appearance in it. But if you watch that goal, that is McGregor and O'Reilly. And there's one pass by Hatate as well. That is McGregor and O'Reilly all the way up the park. They're touching it three, four times. Everybody else has one touch here and one touch there. And I just think it's no coincidence with, I don't know if you agree with me, that Hatate coming back in just made things easier for O'Reilly again.
Well, if you look at it, I think it was 14 passes in the lead up to that goal. It came from, and the first one was like Tavernier passing it straight to like a Celtic player. I can't remember what the Celtic player was, but who was
it? Passes it to McGregor, I think.
Was it McGregor? Right. So it was 14 passes. Yeah. But you see that, and what Rangers were trying to do, they were trying to man mark Celtic's midfield three. So nominally, Lawrence was on McGregor. Diomandi was on Hatate, and he did know a bad job on Hatate, it has to be said. He's the youngest one, the guy with real legs, and then it was Lundstrom on O'Reilly. But if you look at that goal, Lundstrom stands off O'Reilly when O'Reilly, because the space opens up because of the way that it's been, because McGregor sends, Forrest sends McGregor down the kind of right inside channel. And then he knocks it back, and because Lawrence gave up on him, Lundstrom gave up on O'Reilly. So if you've got man marking, if people are not doing their jobs, then the space opened up for O'Reilly. Just it was the very space he had that space. He knew exactly what the space was because there was no one else around him. So that's how it kind of worked out. So even having a player that Rangers had to put, they felt that they wanted to do like the man marking or try the man marking. Because then that's like Diomandi might have been there. He might have been because he'd more legs, if you like. He'd more energy than Lawrence and Lundstrom were showing. So he might have, without Hatate being there, they might not have tried the man marking, and therefore they might have Diomandi making more of an impression at that in that area of the field. So it all helps, because if you've got players that your opposition are fearful of, then it forces them. It's quite a negative thing to man mark Oliver. Kilmarnock have done it well against Celtic this season. That's what they've done for their two wins out at Rugby Park, because McInnes has said that's what they've decided to do. So, you know, when you've got your best players and you've got players that your opposition fear, then things like this open up for you. So the goal in itself, even though Hatate wasn't really directly involved, he was indirectly involved in a way because of the way he made Rangers play, even from the off.
It reflects the mentality of that team, though, that they thought they were second best, and they played as if they were second best as well. You know, that midfield, you're right. Lundstrom didn't look as though he thought they were going to win the game. Lawrence doesn't look as though he thinks they're going to win the game. Barisic was terrified of Forrest through that entire game. Forrest gave him a doing, particularly in that first half.
Oh, yeah, the first 15 minutes.
I thought that was originally down to Abada's youth and pace and strength. It wasn't he, because Forrest is a different type of player, but Forrest just had the freedom to cut in every time he wanted. And it just invited him to come in there, and because Forrest can go either way, he didn't know and he just left him. That was tremendous to see. But the key thing for me in that goal was the run by McGregor. McGregor absolutely sees it coming and he busts a gut, and that Lawrence just can't match him at all. But then it's also a sense that, see, if you're going to put players down to man mark, Lawrence isn't that type of player. You know, the guy, when they brought him up for Derby, they brought him up as an attacking midfielder, creative player, who's going to change games for them. I've not seen anything in the guy that makes me think that he's anything other than a Division 1 English journeyman. But he's certainly no good enough to stop McGregor playing. And McGregor ran riot there. And, you know, that Lundstrom looks as though he's done. He's watching himself for this move to Turkey if it's coming. But that then, you have to ask questions. If you're a Rangers fan, see your continental manager that's going to turn the club upside down and change everything for you. He doesn't get it right in terms of these games. He played Scott Wright on the wing against us at Ibrox. I would have real questions in my head just now about his competence as the manager of that club. Long may he continue to be there, but he picked his team really poorly. He deployed them really poorly, and he got what he deserved, which was nothing.
The second goal, because I'm going to talk about the way they set up, the second goal, because of course when that follows quickly after the first, the diagonal ball, and the one thing, Eddie, that for the 2 years he's been here that people have criticised Maeda for is his control and his first touch. It was incredible. I mean, that's a diagonal ball that's covering, you know, half the pitch, and he just brings it down and then runs onto it. And
it's for centre-half that does it as well. You know, it's Cameron Carter-Vickers that hits that ball. Now, I think Cameron Carter-Vickers probably the best player in the country. And when he's there in that team, everything seems to work a hell of a lot better for Celtic than when he's not. You know, it just him sitting at the bottom of the team and seeing it all in front of him gives them confidence, they can step forward, that the defence seems much better organised. I'm not really thinking of him as doing the Paul McStay long diagonal from one side of the pitch to the other, you know, but for him to do that, and you're right, Maeda went and picked that up. His touch was some of the best we've seen, because we know, you know, we love a wee man, but you never know what you're going to get. You know, 9 times out of 10, he could have brought that ball down and he could have hit me in the face with the way he went and hit it as I get it across, straight up into the stand. But what you also got to take into consideration was, 2 weeks ago, we thought we weren't going to see him again this season. You know, and not only is he picking that ball up, but he's creating goals, and he's jumping into the crowd, and it's just great moments. You know, I saw somebody say he should be sitting on a beach just now, no jumping into that crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
I saw that one.
That's fantastic. It's a great moment. And the other thing is, the pictures are more, everybody piling in, just arms everywhere, everybody celebrating. They're great moments in Celtic history. Remember that time Maeda jumped right into the crowd in that Rangers game? Remember, you know, you'll never forget that. You know, remember he got booked for it, and he said, you know, you'd get booked for that anyway. That's fantastic. You know, O'Reilly comes to try to drag him back out, and then the steward has to carry him like a big baby. He's clinging on his legs and he's wasting everything carrying him. Fantastic moments. Absolutely brilliant. You know, that's just a guy who shouldn't have been playing. And the fact he played last week, and what a cheery goal when he came on the pitch. We're seeing cult heroes right in front of us right now. You know, people have spoken about the limitations of this team this season, and they've moaned about Rodgers, and they've moaned about the quality of football, and this, that, and the other. These are great moments. These are things we're going to remember. We were talking there about St. Patrick's Day Massacre, stuff like that. These are things that people are going to remember for the next 30, 40 years and come back to and say, I'll tell you what, son, there was this one thing. You want to see what he did? He went to, caused an OG, and then he just ran straight into the crowd, and then he just threw himself right in him. He started crowd surfing. He was there for about 5 minutes. You can't buy that. You can't make that up. You can't write that. That's what made it so good. That was a fantastic moment in Celtic history that we saw there. That's Lustig's Polis cap type of moment. That's what that is. Absolutely brilliant. So, yes, I thought he had a great game. I thought he terrified, as I anticipated he would do, terrified Tavernier. See when I saw him come off the bench last week, I thought, right, that's us sorted. Tavernier's not going to be able to get across the halfway line and cause any damage, because he's going to be looking out for him all the time, because he knows that in the first couple of seconds of the game at Ibrox, he made a muggy it, and that guy made him look stupid. So he's going to be wary of him. And I saw guys saying, you know, why does he not get close to him at that point for the OG? He's obviously trying to get a yard so he can see what he's going to do, because if he goes close to him, Maeda just runs away from him. So he's going to wait and see where he's going and try and jockey him out. And he tries to push him out to the touchline, because he thinks that's what he has to do. He just plays it through his legs. You know, it was a bit of luck involved in it. I don't think it was a great ball back into the box. It was a ball into space. It wasn't to anybody. It was a ball into space. It was through Tavernier's legs. And again, Lundstrom coming in, and it's just the body language and the whole shape of his shoulders and stuff like that. It's just a loser's mentality. It just looks like, I'm going to make a mug of this. And it came so quickly after the previous goal. You just thought, oh, that's it. That's it done. Shades again. Let's sound like real Celtic does. Shades of St. Johnson and getting a nice early goal. You know, you know that we're stopping 10 in a row. You think, that's it. We've won the league. They're not coming back for this. They're done. You know, and that's what made it so good. All right, there was a wee moment afterwards when they get a goal, and you'll talk about that in a wee minute. But it wasn't even enough, because you could see they didn't have the belief that they could do anything. And they reinforced that by scoring OGs, letting us run after them. They knew we were better than them, and all those moments just came together. Great, great.
You mentioned about Tavernier, actually, because North Stand right below me, there was periods until we scored the second, there was periods in the first half where I didn't think Tavernier was playing right back. I actually thought he was playing in midfield, and I think, was it Sterling that was right back? Was it Diamande? Because I actually thought they're so fearful. Tavernier's so fearful of Maeda that he's not actually wanting to. They've actually changed about their system a wee bit so that because there was times Maeda was going down and Tavernier was in the middle of the park like an inverted fullback or a defensive midfielder.
I think Tavernier was always behind the right winger. And it was Sterling. Sterling was playing further up because I think they were playing Sterling on Taylor to just have you know, he's stronger than him, he's taller than him, he's possibly a better player than him, you know. But I think that was it. They were doing that, and then they were just targeting the balls out there all the time. I mean, Butland went and hit one out for a throw-in. It was trying to aim for that. It was so clear that was a... There's another thing. You bring this continental manager and it's won leagues in Belgium and it's managed Monaco. It's long ball football. It's agricultural. There's no quality to it at all. There's no entertainment in it. There's no sense of trying to create something. It's lump it all the time. I'm quite taken aback by just how poor his approach to building that team has been. And all right, he'll tell you he's short of players, this, that and the other. But we've all had times in the season where we've been short of players. We've not resorted to that type of football. It's brutal.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that. I couldn't work out what Rangers... I mean, unless they just couldn't cope with us, I couldn't work out what Rangers' system was. Prior to Lundstrom going off, there was virtually nothing that they did in an attacking sense. There was one chance they had with Silva, and this gets back to Silva being their best player. I thought very early on, Silva went shoulder to shoulder with Alistair Johnson, just gave him a nudge, and Johnson fell over, did what he does sometimes. I've seen this in Champions League football, is look at the referee and that's not supposed to happen. That's not supposed to happen to me. I mean, the referee is saying, well, it is. He doesn't seem to know how to deal with it. I mean, Eddie mentions Carter Vickers. For me, the quality of Carter Vickers was shown yesterday that I thought three of our back four had awful, awful, awful games yesterday. I thought Alistair Johnson couldn't cope with Silva, couldn't cope with any physicality from him, and it's not as if Silva's the most physical player. And then, obviously, we've got... I mean, I sent a message to Eddie earlier. I remember... Because I saw him do it, and then I counted it thereafter. I saw five occasions where they took a free kick, and Tavernier pointed at Scales and Taylor. He's physically stood in the park, pointed at Scales and Taylor, started shouting at his players, and all the players just went and stood on Taylor and Scales, and then they played this high diagonal ball over to him. Again, back to Eddie's point about their agricultural football, they had one tactic, it seemed to me, which was, well, two tactics. Number one was to sit in like the Diddy teams do and hope that we're tired in the last 10 minutes and they might get something from it. And tactic number two was, and they were physically pointing at it, hoof the ball at Greg Taylor and Liam Scales because they're garbage. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, funny, you got so much stick about it, Michael Beale, about Rangers not having an identity under him. It's like, where's the identity now?
Mm-hmm.
No one uses that, but it was a stick to beat Beale with. I thought that was overplayed, to be honest with you. And I actually said to Beale himself, says, "What if people are asking, what is your identity? What is your identity?" And he says, "Oh, people always say that. As soon as you lose games, they bring this up." But it's funny, they haven't actually started to ask the same kind of searching questions of Clément. They will now. Of course, they will now. And this cup final that's coming up, it's like everything, because if Celtic win that, and it's not only just the 118 trophies each and all the rest of it, it's also the fact that if he loses the first derby next season, is it another? Do they do that again? Do they switch manager at that period in the season again? You know, after the opening five or six games, if they've lost to Celtic, which they could well do. They could, if he loses these next two games to Celtic, where does Clément go? Clément will hang around a bit more because the cupboard is bare in the sense of they can't just keep dispensing, paying up contracts of management teams, coaching teams. You know, even beyond that, and some of the, he's had approval for, you know, your scouting setup. He was involved in all these hires. So he will get longer. But that's what happens in football sometimes. One guy gets longer only because Nick Montgomery at Hibs, I would say, is probably, he's got as poor a record as wee Sean Maloney, you know, and like and Johnson, like. But they have to kind of give him a bit more time because they kind of keep doing what they've been doing before.
I know, but it's Clément's, great.
Isn't it? I know. Clément's got really. I mean, this cup final is humongous. I've heard Celtic Sports and I don't really care about the cup final now. No, no, no. It's humongous for what comes. If you go forward, having come almost in a whole season to beat Celtic and not managed it. Oh, that puts them under huge pressure with a complete rebuild going into the start of next season. And Celtic will be better. Celtic will be better next season. I've been telling anybody who wants to listen that for months. Celtic hadn't been, they weren't that great the last 6 months of Postecoglou, which seems to have been kind of airbrushed out of Celtic's history because of the pining for Ange Postecoglou, but they will be better. They will be back to kind of early second season Postecoglou next season. I'm telling you, so, I'm confident in that.
So you prompted me to get on a hobby horse of mine. The flip side to that is, how good is our manager? How good is Brendan Rodgers? Because they can't beat him. They keep going. We'll need to get a different guy to try and beat him. Do you know what it reminds me of? If you ever played, I don't play computer games anymore, but when I was younger, if you ever played like Football Manager or something like that, yeah, and there was just a game that you could never win, so you would then just, a team that you could never beat, and you just keep saving everything, change everything you did, and try again, and you would still not win. So you'd save it, and you just keep doing this repeat of, I'm just going to save at this point and redo it and redo it. How good is our manager that they keep doing that Football Manager system of, they keep, right, okay, well, let's get another guy in to see if they can beat Brendan Rodgers. No, you can't. You can't beat Brendan Rodgers because he's because you'll not get a better manager than him.
I know.
Am I right?
Talk about video games, he's boss level, right? You can deal with all the wee guys building up to that, but then when you get to the end of the level, you need to play against the boss level baddie, right? And he is boss level. They can do fine against the other wee teams, and they can, well, mostly beat the Dundees of this world and the Ross Counties, and they can beat. But then they come up and go, oh, right, we've got to come at the end of this level, and we've got to beat him, and they can't beat him. He beats Rangers just about every single time. What is it? He's 13 wins, 3 draws, and 1 defeat.
I think that's what it is.
I mean, that's an incredible statistic, isn't it? You know, he's got their number. And it's not just about what he does on the pitch. See the build-up to this game? He's been in their heads for a month. Mm. See the shift in Rodgers? I've not been on for a good few weeks since the Green Brigade podcast, and when I was proved right about the Palestinian thing. But since then, right, it's... come on, you need to bite at that, Harry. Come on, there's no point in me throwing that one out there and you're just ignoring it.
Because we've already had the private conversation where you were wrong, so I'm just leaving out. I don't embarrass you to listeners. Anyway, so carry on.
Let's get back to this. You know when people tune in for? They don't tune in for this rubbish. They tune in for the 2 hours and they go each other. Seeing the build-up to it, the change in him, where he decided, I'm not having this anymore. I'm not being... my old Brendan, I'll re-ingratiate myself and I'll do my best for you and all that sort of stuff. He decided that he was going to, you were talking about it in the podcast the other week, you know, it was Billy Big Boys, and I'm going to just do it. This is the way it is. I'm in charge. He took control and he won the battles inside the club. You know, you can see that the way things are changing. He won the battles inside the club. He says, we're going to do it my way or we're not going to do it at all. And it takes me back to the Mike Bassett stuff. Way back in the day when they keep getting asked in that form, where they were all asked them, what formation are you going to play, mate? You're going to do this, you're going to do that. Maybe do a triangle, maybe do a Christmas tree, maybe do... And at the end of it, he decides, do you know what? And they're all asking him and having a go at him. Oh, Andrew's cronies, right? We're all having a go at him. What about this, what about that? And harassed him for the final game. They went, we're going to play 4-4-2. Right? And that's the end of the conversation. Because he goes, that's what we're going to do. Rodgers has done the equivalent of that in the last month. He just went, do you know what? Never mind all that crap. We're going to play 4-4-2 because I'm in charge and what I say goes. What a difference it's made. And that's what we wanted. We brought in a guy who was an elite level manager. He didn't get a Liverpool job by chance. You know, he was one slip away for winning the league there. Why would a guy that's working at that level come to Celtic and why would he come back to Celtic? But we've got to understand what a level a manager he's actually capable of. And all the resentment that he left, I agree with all that. I felt all that as well. I'm a Celtic supporter, same as everybody else. But he's here now, and he's the best manager in the country. And he's showed it over the last couple of weeks. He knows how to win. He knows how to beat them. And just see all the mind games he's been doing. Talking about, we'll have some fun. And, oh, no, I didn't mean this. I didn't mean that. We all know what he meant. Because it went right inside their head. It come on strings for the last couple of weeks. And he says, our guys know how to do it. Our guys are ready for it. We're looking forward to it. And he knows that they've not got the mentality for it. absolute brilliant management. Brilliant management. And yesterday showed it as well. He's the best manager in the country by a mile. We're lucky to have him. Let's call it that way. And it, certainly, all that stuff about going through the motions, I think he was being held back by some influences within the club that now he's been released from, and he can just go and be the manager he should be. And there'll be things about that we don't like. He'll say one thing one day, and then he'll say something the exact opposite another day. You know, not having a bit was perfect. But see for what we want, he's the best manager we could get, and we're lucky to have him.
Definitely, I said that at the time. Look, that I hoped that he would come back. And it's a chance for him to repair. He didn't want it. It's a weeping sore about how people felt about him. Now he's people are on side again. Mostly. I still see the odd tweet and all that saying, I'm still not happy the way he left and all this kind of stuff. But I think most people, he's won them over again. And see that, see his stuff yesterday? He directs it to the press because he can't direct it and say, oh, you supporters, see all that stuff about, oh, I've been treated as if I'm a novice. You know, I've been this and that, and people say I was going through the motions. The stick he was taking was not mainly from the media. It was from the support. He got far more stick for the support than he did for the media. But he can't turn around and say, ha, told you so, support. Because he doesn't want it. So when he makes statements like that, it's for, you know, he's facing two ways.
I don't think that was aimed at the support. I don't think it was aimed at the media or the support. I think that was aimed at a third party.
No, since we had that conversation, I think it's aimed at a couple of people, actually.
But he's been doing it all the time about, and I was there most of the time, he was doing it all the time about, he actually said to us one week, he said, nothing's the same here now, my second spell, nothing's the same. This was, we were saying, was he quite as engaged, or did he feel as if, it had been a false prospectus when he was coming back? I don't ever think he was promised the 30 million and all this kind of stuff that people said. He wouldn't come back unless he's getting 30 million. He knew, he told us that first press conference he was back as well, that he said, no, I've not made any promises. He knew how it worked about the way that Celtic slice up their budget, their transfer budget. He wasn't promised 20, 30 million, and then people were trying to say, oh, he never got this. He's one of these big players and that big player, and then he never got them, and then he's in the huff. I don't think any of that was necessarily true. It was just sour. There was just a sour atmosphere around all aspects of the club, because it was a club in mourning, as we said before, about the support were in mourning for the blessed.
What did you think he meant then when he was saying nothing's the same? But did you get anything out of him where he said, like, did he point to specifics that you could share where when he says nothing was the same? What was he alluding to?
He was saying about, oh, just the relationship, you know, like the team, the support. He said it was like a holistic thing he was saying. Nothing's the same, because everything was plain sailing for him first time around. And it was a very weak Rangers. I mean, this is a Rangers that's several levels above the Rangers that he was up against. He also knew his timing was impeccable in the sense of getting Rangers when they were always going to be incredibly weak, having taken 2 years to get out of the Championship, you know. Like, so everything fitted into place for him, and it was never going to be as easy as that. And at the bargain at that time, his playing budget was five times what Rangers was playing budget. Now the playing budgets are actually pretty similar. Rangers actually spent more. Their salary spend in the last set of accounts was higher than Celtic's. It's incredible to think.
There was definitely mood music sent out that we were going to really go for it in terms of, you know, bringing them back. We're going to go to the next level. We're going to try and make an impact on Europe. Stuff like that. That music, whether that was legit or no, that was definitely being put about as part of him coming back. Now, that might have been wishful thinking by support.
I think it was. I think it was just people not understanding.
Maybe a couple of people maybe running their mouth off and being over enthusiastic for inside the club about how great it was he was coming back and talking it up. I'm not saying that there was nothing, you know, that we're going to start signing 30 million pound players left, right and centre, but there was definitely a vibe of, we're not messing about here. Right? And I don't know whether that was just to try to talk us all back up again after the disappointment of Ange going and try to create a feel-good factor about him coming back and trying to offset the negativity of why we're bringing Brendan Rodgers back. But there was definitely a wee bit more to it than I think just the fans creating that, Andrew, to be honest with you.
I think it takes is one person to hear that their uncles, cousins, wives, you know what I mean? Like,
I know, you don't need to tell me. I know. It's like, you want to catch me doing anything like that on Twitter? But, you know, there's people do these things. I accept that completely.
So one person says it, and then it becomes, it's almost accepted fact. And it's never been a fact of any variety. So people just buy into it. You hear what you want to hear, and you hear something like that that's like what you want to be the case, however much you want it to be the case, it was never going to be the case. They were never going to deviate from the transfer model. They were never going to promise Brendan Rodgers 30 million will get you a couple of £15 million players. I mean, he told us he told us that at the first press conference. I don't know where this has come from. And then about 3 weeks later, he said, look, this isn't the case. He was trying his damnedest to douse it, like in those early days.
I think the other factor, though, is by selling Jota for 25 million, I don't think the fans were unreasonable in expecting a bigger reinvestment at the time than they got in terms of, you know, in terms of who was going to come in and who was going to replace Jota. Instead of your Tilios, your Yangs, even your Coons at the next transfer window, you know, I think they were expecting that it'd be a step up. And I don't know if the flames were doused quite as quickly as perhaps they should have been by some folk.
He tried anyway, in fairness to him. He tried.
At a club of Celtic size, you've got a 16% chance of a player signed below £3 million becoming a first team player or being sold at a profit. You have a 33% chance of a player between £5 million and £3 million being a first team, becoming a first team regular or being sold at a profit. Then between 5 and 7 million, it hits 50%. And above 7 million, you're pretty much guaranteed you're going to get a regular first team player and a return on investment. And I understand that the club now get that.
Maybe last summer they didn't.
I think the club appreciate they've been buying too cheaply. So I do think there will be
too many. Too many as well.
Well, it is too many. I mean, I've gone on umpteen times on this podcast, and Eddie knows why about, you know, we play three in the middle, so you don't go and sign four midfielders for that one occasion that one of them's not fit, which is what we did. But it's about spreading your bets. Oh, we've got £8 million to spend. We'll go and buy four £2 million midfielders. Well, the consequence of that is you're guaranteed that they're all going to fail, actually, because you've gone and spread, you know, in terms of trying to spread your bets and hedge your bets, you've actually guaranteed that you're going to get none of them succeeding.
But look at Celtic, I think we're burned by, we all talk about, instead of spending these guys at 2 and 3 million, if they just got a couple of £5 million signings, oh yeah, they did that. I'll tell you their names. Vasilis Barkas and Abu Najeti. 2 £5 million players. They get no return from. So it doesn't always work.
But I tell you what, you have an 84% chance of failure if you buy below £3 million.
So then you've got Matt O'Reilly. So he's not the failure. You know, it's
one swallow does not a summer make, Andrew. If I was in charge and I got people coming to me suggesting more than one under £3 million player, I'd say you're at the wrong club, son. Move on.
Where are you basing this data on? Where are you getting it from? I'm not saying you're
data,
wrong.
So I've done quite a lot of research, picked out clubs that all are either a third of our size, like Copenhagen and Michelin, who are 20% of our size, right the way up to clubs that are just marginally bigger than us in terms of annual revenues that they generate and their transfer dealings. And I've looked at their transfer dealings over the last 12 years. Basically, since the day Rangers went bust, when we should have changed everything about our models, and I've looked at, and it smacks you in the face. If you can't spend 10 seconds looking at that spreadsheet and go, I know what Celtic's problem is, they buy too cheaply, then you're probably financially dyslexic or whatever. You can't even read numbers because it slaps you in the face that the team with the lowest return on investment out of about 16 clubs that I compared us with, the team with the lowest return on investment on their transfer dealings by some huge margin is us. And the team whose coefficient in European football has moved the least is us. And the team who spend most amount of money below £3 million is us. So, I mean, it's not even just superficially looking at those numbers, but they've been analysed in more detail by other people, not my specific numbers, but the similar numbers. And that's the statistics of where you are. So, fortunately, I believe that we are really, really looking now at Brendan Rodgers having the level of authority that a sort of 1980s football manager might have had at a football club.
I wouldn't like to be a scout at the club just now that's having to bring in a left back, a left side centre half, a keeper, possibly a right back, at least one midfielder, maybe two midfielders, at least one winger, a backup striker, and they've all got to be about £7 million each. So what was that? That was eight players there, so I make that £42 million that we need to spend. No, I don't make that £42 million, I make that £56 million. Numbers aren't my strong point. So it's £7 million each. We're not going to do that. So we're still going to take punts.
Well, we are still going to take punts, but for the key positions where you decide we must, you know, that this is an important position, and the person we are signing is not going to be to create a squad of quality, of, you know, to improve the squad. This is a guy who's going to be first team football. That's where you spend your £7-8 million.
So, yeah, and I actually think they will. I think there'll be a few signings in that bracket in the summer. I'm pretty confident of that as well. I think you'll see a few. Plus
what
five.
What makes you say that?
I just think, like, especially there comes a point where you learn for, like, organisations have got a tendency, and especially football clubs, if you did something that didn't work, then you try the opposite. Celtic have also got the kind of financial latitude to be a bit more expansive now. They do have the financial latitude because it is worth, I mean, the Champions League is worth £45 million to them. They will get the £20 million for O'Reilly. There is £50+ million in the bank. So all these factors come into play that they can loosen the purse strings. And I don't think they were ever as tight as people said. They had a system, okay, maybe they shouldn't have been so slavishly following it, but by and large, it's like my boy walking out the game, my boy last night, my boy's 14. And I say, son, since you've been on this earth, I said, you know, I said, Celtic, you've been on this earth 14 years, and Celtic have won the league 12 of them. I said, there's no many people, you'd need to be 13, a 13-year-old could have a slightly better, if we're talking about percentages and figures, a slightly better percentage of how many of their years on this earth Celtic have won the title. So a 13-year-old would just be prime, but my boy's almost prime at 14. I said, this has never happened. No team in Scottish football has ever won 12 out of 13 titles. Struth didn't do it. Rangers, when they went for their 9 in a row to Dick Advocaat's kind of outrageous spend, they only ever, Celtic as well, like after, so they only ever get, it tends to be 11. You tend to get 11 out of 13. I think there's a few 11s out of 13, but no one's ever done 12 out of 13. So I said, this is, son, you are living the high life. And that's, to me, I said, that's the best of the lot of them. That's the best of the lot of them. This one, I know it's not done yet, but it's going to be done. And it's the best of the lot of them because there wasn't many Celtic supporters you were speaking to like 8 weeks ago that were saying Celtic were going to win the league. I spoke to plenty of Celtic supporters who said, you know, Rangers are going to get a treble here.
Do you think that's a consequence of we're now so used to domination that when there's actually a challenge or, you know, for whatever reason, for us having a lot of injuries and allowing them to get close to us, that folk are only conditioned to understand that, and again, this makes you sound like a right Celtic Dan. I suppose we just lean into it because it's only Celtic Dan's that are listening to us anyway, right? So, do you think there's folk that they're only conditioned to understand that, you know, you're in a competition and you've got to compete and there'll be, you know, you won't always have your nose in front in a league and you need, you know, go back and they'll have a wee spell, then you'll have a wee spell, and then the winners will start to emerge in the final furlong and it'll start to become clear who's going to win the league. And perhaps over the last, because of that, because we've been so used to, nine in a row and then another two after that, that the folk just don't really appreciate that this is the way a league title should be won. This is where league season should go. If it's just a canter every single year, people get bored with it. Now, I'm not saying I enjoyed it. Do you know what I mean? But that is the nature of football. You've got to be more satisfying.
You might not enjoy it, but at the end, it's far more satisfying than winning it by 25 points. Although, if you win it by 25 points, you know what I mean? It might be fun while you're doing that, but that sense of kind of achievement, there's a genuine sense of achievement because it could have all fallen apart. Celtic, people talk about Rangers kind of handing them it back, really. Celtic handed Rangers it and Rangers handed it back in a way. But it's not really like that because it lasts 18 games. So that's 54 points to play for. Celtic have taken 45. That's their kind of dominant form of most, you know, that's the kind of form that the best Celtic teams have produced. Okay, it's only half a season, but it is. Those 18 games, they stepped up. They found a way sometimes with your Hibs and your Motherwells when they really possibly didn't deserve to win either of those two games, it has to be said. But they won those games. As I say, they've taken 45 points from a possible 54. That's what wins you titles.
Back onto the game for a minute. So we went 2-0 up. Brendan said this afterwards, and I thought this at the game as well. We just switched off because we thought we'd won the game. Everybody was sort of jogging into position because the crowd had gone mental. Oh, that's it. Two goals in a couple of minutes. That's us won the league. It looked like the players had gone, yeah, that's it. We've won the league. And everybody jogged about and their goal, Silva goes down. Forrest doesn't track Barisic's run. So there's two Rangers players on Forrest. He then just dinks a chip over. A chip over to the back post that loops over and the left side of our defence is just useless and they put the ball in the back of the net. Although it really didn't seem to put a downer in the crowd.
I thought it did.
I thought people kept singing through it.
No, I thought the absolute opposite because actually before the red card, I turned to the guy because I was just myself, but it was a lovely guy that I was sitting with. It was such a joy, actually, to have such a nice guy beside me. And I said, you'd think Celtic were losing this, the way the crowd are right now. I said, I think people have forgotten their 2-1 up. I thought it just died. I thought the atmosphere died.
I thought the atmosphere kept going at that point. Eddie,
I didn't get that vibe at my end of the ground, particularly. I think, you know, nobody was delighted the Rangers had scored. I'll go with that. And I think we were anticipating that the rest of the game would just be laying our way through every pass. And the fact that it went to 2-1, you thought, oh, you know, but not to the extent that, we're in a game because we dominated that entire half. And I think the majority of the support around me appreciated that we dominated that half. And they had managed to break up the park and we're giving away one of those stupid goals that we sometimes give away to the Motherwells of this world or the Kamalics of this world. You know, you think, we did that for Celtic. You know, you're all out of them here. There was a bit of that, but I didn't think that it caused us at that point to start to panic or worry. I think in the 80th minute, I think it had a definite impact then. But certainly there, I thought, I'd actually go back to something you were saying, Harry, in terms of, I think Alistair Johnson was unfortunate in that it was 2-on-1. As you say, because I thought Forrest a great game, but he never tracked that run. I don't think Alistair Johnson had a bad game against Silva. I think it was a good tussle between the two of them. You know, I'm not quite sure that Johnson got the upper hand or Silva got the upper hand. But I don't think that he did poorly. But they played the ball exactly as they were intending to do every single time for any direction they could, onto our left back. And they go to the return, and it shows the same weakness that we've been exposed to time and time again. And I've defended Taylor countless times on here and off here with you talking about him. But it did expose him, and it did expose that the centre half next to him totally lost Dessers as well. And Dessers is in the 6-yard box, and he just has to make contact with the ball, you know. But he likes to see Rangers score at Celtic Park at any time. But I think we kind of. We rolled with it, and there was still a positivity. I think the atmosphere changed when we missed the penalty in the second half. I definitely,
I would agree with that. That's what I thought, the atmosphere changed, you know, at the penalty miss. Because the atmosphere went up again. Guy next to me called it straight away when Lundstrom got booked. He immediately says, VAR will review this and he's going to get a red. And this is like upper tier, North Stand. You know, it's not like right next to it. Straight away, he can see that's going to be a straight red because he does come flying in from ages. And obviously, I've subsequently heard Kenny Miller, who does that amazing Rangers punditry, Rangers fan pundit thing of, I know the rules say that it's a red card, but I still don't like it.
Yeah. But they've never had to be the rules applied to them in any context. So that's why they get hurt when the rules are applied to them. He says, no, wait a minute, we should be treated differently. Don't you know that we're Rangers? Both versions of them, we are still Rangers. So the rules don't apply to us the way they apply to everybody else. We are the establishment club. No, that's the rules. The sad thing is, Willie Colm only gave him a yellow when it was clearly a red. You know, so that the amount of times that I would have thought that there should have been at least three yellow cards for Rangers players before one of our players was booked. And Dyson Maeda was the first one booked. The guy in midfield did McGregor twice. There was an elbow into the face of Hatate within the first minute. I can't remember. I think it may have been Suter, but I can't remember. But should have been booked as well. But you know that way, let him away with a couple of early ones, let the game settle was clearly a tactic. And then when there is a red card decision, he only goes to yellow. You know, so the fact that VAR called it back was a positive.
I have to say, with my patterns of assistance again, Brian, like we were worried about all these runs ending. Instead, they've actually got further embellishment. You know, it's now 10 Rangers players have been red carded at games Celtic Park since the last time a Celtic player was red carded in games against Rangers at Celtic Park. And now, is that 15 penalties to one in the last 24 years? Like games against Rangers at Celtic Park, it's hardly the officials are all out to get Celtic, really, is it? Like,
but does it show their limitations as a team?
Weaker team
is more likely to put in a crazy challenge because the guy's running away from them and it's too good for them, you know, rather than any sort of danger. You know, because that wouldn't have been a red card, and it should have been. You know, if it wasn't for VAR, that would have been another one of those yellow cards. And you go back to Griffiths against the old guy that came for Queen's Park Rangers for them years ago, right at the last minute, and there should have been a penalty at that point. Clint Hill, that's him, exactly. And if there wasn't, you know, if VAR had been available there, that must have been a penalty as well and a red card at that point. So whilst I think VAR's terrible, it got it right at that point. You know, so, Kenny Miller was a class act, absolute class act, complaining about, I know by the letter of the law it's a red card, but I don't want it to be a red card. And I particularly liked his comment of, I mean, well, he's been cute. Alistair Johnson has put his foot there, but at the bottom of his leg. Obviously, that's where he's put his foot. Otherwise, he's got to fall out. You know, it's like, if Alistair Johnson doesn't put his foot there, then Lundstrom doesn't dive into it. It's a bit like the provocative show of ankle that Billy Stark showed way back in the day. You know, it was obvious that it had to be seen off. And it was great to see. It was great to see.
Yeah. And you can listen to the future pod to hear Billy talking about that very moment, like which we've already recorded.
So on the one thing I would say about that's what I was going to say. The one thing I was going to say about Willie Colm that I thought, to be fair to the guy, he was brave in that he goes to VAR and overturns his own decision to give a red. And then goes, I've never seen it in a game where I've been at. A referee has gone to the screen and stuck with his decision for the penalty. And again, at the penalty, at the game, my brother was like, this is going to, before it went to VAR, he said, oh, he dived, that'll get overturned. And I said, no, I think he has gone down easily, but contact's been made. And then when Willie Colm's going over and he's looking at it for ages, I'm saying, I think he might stick to his decision because although O'Reilly's gone down easily, I think contact was made on him. And I think Colm will be saying, look, I saw contact being made. There's not enough here for me to overturn that decision. I'm going to stick with it. What's your thoughts, Andrew, on those?
Yeah, I agree with you because I was sure that he was going to overturn the penalty. I've actually seen Willie Colm at Ibrox like stick with his original decision even when he's told, no, you've got it wrong. Like, and he had a crazy game against St John's, I think it was last January when he was all over the shop. He was absolutely all over the shop. But so if there's one guy who kind of almost is a kind of cussedness that he's the guy that, you know, if I think it is right, then that I will stand by what I've... I actually didn't think it was a penalty, I have to be honest. I don't think, even though if the contact's made, but contact's made and then he does half a stride before he decides, well, I'm going down. There are no penalties I like to see given. They are given, so I suppose at the risk of sounding like Kenny Miller, maybe these are the kind of penalties that are given now, so fair enough in this age, but I don't think they are penalties.
Were you on VAR yesterday, Andrew? Was he sure he was on VAR yesterday? It was calling him back to... No, we're not having that. Come on. He tripped him. He thought, right, there's a contact there. I've lost my footing. If I go down, it's dead. Obviously, he's tripped me. And he went down. It was a foul. It was a soft foul. It was a penalty. Listen, I'll take any penalties going against them.
Well, you start to get plenty of them at Celtic Park.
You've been a professional for far too long. That's the problem.
and then my pet hate of a penalty is crucial. Yeah. As I keep getting back to, it's 0.5 of a second. If you hit the ball, if a professional footballer hits it as hard as he can, it goes up 80 miles an hour plus. And at 80 miles an hour plus, for the ball to travel 12 yards, takes half a second. And particularly with modern stuff where the keeper's not allowed to move until the strike happens, for the brain to send the signal to the body, for the body to then move, takes 0.6 of a second. So if you hit it with your laces through the ball at 80 plus miles an hour, provided you don't hit it straight at the keeper, the ball will hit the back of the net before the keeper can get to it, just by simple physics and biology. So don't do this. I don't know what it is. Our players seem to specialise in this fartiness, floaty, shitty penalty crap.
It was a terrible, terrible penalty. You know, the other reason why it was a terrible, terrible penalty, because see if you look at Butland's position, because I said to the guy beside me, I said, look, he's almost saying, he's telling O'Reilly to put it to his left, because he left much more space to his left than to his right. So he's saying to O'Reilly, put it there, because he'll know that that's where O'Reilly put the one the week before. So What does O'Reilly do? He just plays right into his hands. Not only does he put it there, he taps it there, rather than, as you say, blast it there. You know, look, he did everything. There was everything that was could be wrong about penalty was wrong about that penalty.
Eddie, what's your thoughts on it?
It was a poor penalty. There's no two ways about it. I think that the delay in getting to take it, you know, I'm going to defend the Celtic player again and blame the VAR for taking so long. It was a clear penalty. If they just let him take it, he would have scored that. I've got no basis for that. I don't have the statistics to show that, but I know that in my heart that's what would have happened, right? I don't think that helped, but it was a poor penalty. He said it himself. His language was shocking in the interview at the end. I think it was really disappointing. As a parent of young children, I was quite shocked by the language that Matt O'Reilly, young player of the year, as a role model for children everywhere, particularly my boy who was only there because he's got a 3-match suspension for his team. But that's another conversation for another day. But like I thought it was that. See, at that point, see when you get the penalty, you're like, we're going to put about 5 or 6 by this mob here. We are going to absolutely grind them into the ground here, because up until that point, we were still knocking about really well. You know, they were trying to play that really compact, a bit like we played against Barcelona back in the day. You know, really deep, just stay tight, don't get sucked out, don't create any space behind you. But we were trying to get through them. And the penalty gave us the opportunity to really kick on. And they knew that at 3-1, the game's totally over. They're no coming back for that with 10 men at all. There was no long ball and who knows how it'll bounce, or if Scales went and knocks it wrong, it might go in the back of the net. All that hope was totally extinguished at 3-1. And then it's just a question of how many and their bottle goes. So at that point, you're elated, not because you think you're going to go 3-1, because you know, this is a gateway to 4 or 5 or 6. This is a statement match.
Yeah.
And when it never went in, that was taken away from us. And that's what killed the atmosphere, in my opinion. And also changed the whole complexion and the mentality of the team. Because the team knew that they were on the cusp of that and they had missed out on it as well. And I think that they still played about and they still had control. I think they did quite well. I think maybe when Forrest went tired and came off and they changed their left back, That maybe changed the flow of the game a wee bit. Hatate started to tire, but that was a key moment in the second half. Not that it cost us a game by any stretch of imagination, and I'm not being negative about it, but that could have been, what a day that could have been if that had went in.
Well, it was quite a day anyway, eh? As you say. We settled for a 1-0,
sneaky 1-0. It's one of those ones that as you're going out, particularly the last 10 minutes, you're uptight. But as you're leaving the ground, you're then sort of thinking back going, Hart never had a save to make in that game.
No.
In the second half in particular, when they're doing all this stuff. I mean, there was a couple of things where... There was one point, Greg, in injury time, 7 minutes of injury time, the ball goes out to whoever's wide left at the time, can't think of it. And Greg Taylor decides to go and do an overlapping run past him.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what are you playing at? we're in injury time. If we stick at this, we've won the league. And
he had to make about two blocks. He had to make about two blocks because it looked like he was going to lose it and the ball was going to shoot right behind him. And he just got the break of the ball twice to prevent that happening.
And there was an odd point where Tomoki Iwata got the ball and was about to go leathering up the field. And as in the middle of, I am shouting, stand still. Yes. I just saw Brendan Rodgers leap out the dugout, do his whistle thing and point at him. And there was some nervously bad decision making, I thought, towards the end by a couple of players about when to do it. And then we had two or three breaks away where I thought, with a bit more composure, we could have got the third goal in the last 2 or 3 minutes, but it wasn't to be. And as you say, most important thing is we win. And getting back to the Brendan Rodgers thing, I was remembering just as we were talking there, for me, the change, Eddie, your Billy Big Boggs, Brendan thing, the change to me was at Christmas, New Year, when he said, I'm fed up with the Rangers are coming. Every time since I've been here, they've gone and got a new manager, and this time the Rangers are coming. It was all, I was fully expecting to then come out and go, they win the pre-season trophy every summer, and then the Rangers are coming. And for me, that's when he changed.
I think that was an aspect of it. I think a few things happened at that point. I think he decided
some change in personnel.
Yes, I think that he decided he wasn't having it anymore, and he was either going to win it his way or he was going to lose it his way. He wasn't going to win or lose it somebody else's way, and that changed. I think the Green Brigade came back in. I think that was a bad time for the club as well. It just created instability around about the club. That gets sorted. Mark Lawwell gets bagged. But doesn't he go until a bit later? But, he knew he had won that fight and he knew he was in charge of the club. And that way he has the autonomy to make the decision, to be his own man. And he's either going to be successful being his own man or he's going to, he's going to stand or fall on his own decisions and nobody else's. And that's the type of manager he is. That's the type of leader he is. He has to do it. He can't do it any other way. See the guy that came in at the start of the season and went, I'll see you back here in May. That's what we wanted to sign. We didn't want to sign a subservient guy that will play the game. You want a guy that goes, I'm better than you. Because that permeates the club and the players buy into that. They want somebody to believe in. The fans want somebody to believe in. And humble Brendan wasn't giving us that. So when he got control of the club, when he won the battle with the boardroom, which I assume he's done because of the subsequent changes and the way he's been approaching things, when that battle was over, that's when he could kick on and go, no, we're going to do it this way. And I think that was part of what his statement was at the end of the game, was, he was selling a couple of scores there.
So, somebody within the club told me that pretty much from February onwards, the self-assuredness within Celtic of Brendan Rodgers just permeated amongst everybody. Brendan had no doubt we were going to win the league. When people were having wobbles in February, when your bit, Andrew, about... as one of your colleagues said to me, they were fed up in December and in January here, and FU Celtic were going to win the league every time they covered a game at Ibrox. Yes. And I think people were starting to get concerned within Celtic, and this person was saying to me, the level of self-assuredness that Brendan was giving everybody, nobody in the club had any doubt we were going to win the league.
And certainly, obviously, McGregor has that as well, because he has won so often in not quite these circumstances, but he just believes in, he believes in the whole ethos, and he believes in where they are. Like, so McGregor gives you that on the pitch as well, which I saw Brendan Rodgers talked about his game management and what he brings to the players around him, because it's just this zeal for winning and this belief that he will win, this assuredness that he will, that they will see it through.
So it's technically not won yet. Obviously, if we were to lose 3-0, 3-0 in the next two games, and Rangers win 2-0, 2-0 or something, then they would win the league on goal difference. Big question, Eddie. Do you think we will have won the league by the time we next play? Or do you think we need to get a result against Kilmarnock, draw a win?
I think that the fact that it's at home, I think it could be a really entertaining game to watch on Tuesday night for them. Not because anything happens on the pitch, but the vibe off the pitch will be really quite nice to see. But you've got to think, Dundee are coming to Ibrox, Rangers will win. You know, it'll be a forlorn effort on their part, but they have to put a performance in for the people that turn up for them. I think Rangers will win on Tuesday night, and then I think we'll win on Wednesday night.
So my undercover visit to Rugby Park on Wednesday night is going to be worthwhile, Andrew. Is that the case?
Yeah, I agree with Eddie. I think Rangers will win. It's a home game. I mean, Dundee's form just seems to have kind of gone off the edge of a cliff. So I don't see them going to Ibrox and taking anything. They've done their damage to Rangers for that Dens Park game. So I think Celtic will still be alive when Celtic go to Rugby Park.
Am I right in saying that every position now is, I mean, obviously technically we've not won the league, but every position now in the top six is fixed, that each team can catch the team after them?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Like, no, I think it's 5 points between Dundee and St Mirren, but you just say yourself that Dundee are not going to make that up.
Right.
So it's essentially fixed. It's essentially fixed. Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong. Don't get me wrong. Do you know what I mean? It would be great to hear them booing them off at half-time. And I mean, like, you know, don't get me wrong. I want them to get beat. I just think, let's not be too greedy. You know, with a good run and stuff like that, let's be realistic. But I wouldn't be putting my mortgage on Dundee on Tuesday night, you know. But we don't need to. We can just do our own thing. I think that we owe it to Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock are set in fourth place. We owe it to Kilmarnock to put them down a wee bit. McInnes has had a really good season. Probably rightly manager of the year, given what he's managed to do with Kilmarnock over the last 2 years. But I think Rodgers will go there with a point to prove. I wonder if it'll affect who we play because of the surface. Some players still not 100% clear of injury. You know, Maida, who looked great on yesterday, but maybe think about whether to play him or not. Will it affect McGregor? Different things like that. Hopefully we'll play the same team. My biggest concern is it's the awards night tonight, and if they all go out after it, then they may be a bit worse for the wear, you know, but I'm sure that the manager will keep them in check, because we've not won it yet. It's not over until it's over, you know.
Yeah, I think they will. I think Callum McGregor, I think there's enough winners in that team that I think he'll play the first team, because the most important, win that game, and you can give them the St Mirren game on the bench or whatever, or, you know, they don't all have to play the St Mirren game. The most important thing is, I think the manager will play his first choice 11 at Rugby Park, because he's not had an opportunity to do that since he took over as manager. You know, first game when we lost in the League Cup at Rugby Park, we were playing the likes of Lagerbielka. And then the second game when we lost, we were playing, God, that guy that was at Liverpool that wasn't very good. What was
Matt
his name?
Phillips.
Matt Phillips. Yeah. So I think the manager would want to play his first 11, because it's the first chance he's had to do it. And yeah. So what's your thoughts for the score at Rugby Park, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it could be a kind of a 2-0 to Celtic. I think they could. As I say, because Kilmarnock have obviously, their season's effectively over as well. They don't have the same drive So they've done everything and more that they set out to do. So the difference in there may be their kind of bite that they've had in these previous two Rugby Park games. So I think Celtic could knock off a 2-0 here or whatever. 2-0, 3-1.
Aye, 3-1. I think they may get a goal. I think the wing play that they've had has been quite good. The man marking's been quite effective. That is McInnes's MO though, isn't it? He just man marks. But I think that our tails will be up. Our motivation's there. I think we want to put a show on because they want to celebrate winning the league and get it done. So I think 3-1 seems more than likely. And I think we're good enough to do it.
All right. Okay. And with that, I will say thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. And please, wherever you pick up your Essential Celtic listening, it'd be really good if you could rate and like and whatever it is, and subscribe to CelticUnderground.net. We are on visual with words and pictures on YouTube and everywhere else you can hear us. You can also get us and find out more information on all the various social media channels, including Facebook, at Celtic Rumours on Twitter, and at Harry Brady CU. And also we've got Instagram and now TikTok. Yes, for the kids who listen to the Celtic Dad podcast, we've got TikTok. Anyway, it's going to be a lot of news coming along shortly about Andrew Smith. We're going to be doing some stuff with Substack, and so that'll be information will be out very shortly. Anyway, enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with Eddie Pearson and Andrew Smith, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
There should be more happiness, so much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me